It was the ultimate any given Sunday weekend as the 1-7 Falcons beat the 7-1 New Orleans Saints. The Dolphins beat the Colts, but those weren't the biggest ones because the Browns actually managed to win a game and John beat me in fantasy. They're all going to come up on this week's NFL Only Better.
My favorite one. I always say the next one.
Sting like a butterfly, sting like a bee.
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious. That ball was on the line.
Hello and welcome to NFL Only Better, your weekly look ahead to all the action up and coming. And thanks for listening, of course, on the Betfair Podcast Network. We have cricket on Tuesdays, Wednesdays is NFL, Thursdays football, and Friday is racing. So lots to look forward to. Now, joining me as always, but it is a little bit of a change today as well. And normally John Baff is here in studio with me, but John, due to inclement weather conditions in Dublin, you are unable to make it in, which is just lazy, really.
Well, that's correct. I'll say it again, but I was advised not to swim there, and that would currently be the only situation available to me at the moment. It's not fantastic here in Dublin at the moment, I have to say. But it is also quite nice to look out my window and see people getting drenched by the rain. I always kind of enjoy that.
I would have thought that Betfair provided a little rubber boat with an outboard motor, and you could just zip down the Liffey that way.
That is the Betfair boy, which
I thought you were the Betfair boy, Kieran.
that's been humming. Yes, guys. Okay, this is the time we were saying earlier that teams start to look towards playoffs. We're really getting into things. Teams, you know, at least 70% of the teams technically can still make the playoffs. So you would think. And we're looking at last week here and what we got wrong. So you would think that teams in the middle and in the higher echelons would start to get their act together. So then, Mike, tell me how teams that are 1-7 are beating teams that are 7-1 in this weekend.
Well, I could give you the sort of any given Sunday theory. But... Yeah, I think basically you've got a series of injuries in key places, which helps explain Miami beating Indianapolis. You've got a couple of teams that are maybe coming into better form at this halfway point of the season, which might explain Cleveland, might explain Oakland. And you've got Atlanta, who basically produced the best defensive performance I think we've seen from them in two years, which leads me to believe that, you know, somehow Dan Quinn had seen a weak spot in New Orleans' attack. Drew Brees looked, not only did he get battered, but he looked really hesitant in what he was doing. And every time you saw him go back to pass, he was always checking down to the second or third receiver and not throwing the ball very well. And you know, I was almost surprised that they didn't give Taysom Hill a few more passes. He threw one or bring Teddy Bridgewater in just for a little rest or something like that. You know, it was a very strange game. And like a number of the games, it was a penalty laden game. We had a number of games that I would call Blandinos because, You had either like 15 penalties or over 150 yards of penalties combined. And, you know, when you hear those referees that they have in the booth talking about it, they think that that people come to the stadium to watch the referees, you know, and they think that it's great entertainment when the refs get a call right and the replay confirms it. But, you know, you had on the Thursday night game, you had 20 penalties for 165 yards. And on the Rams in Pittsburgh, you had 23 for over 200 yards. When penalties outgains a quarterback, you have a game that's in trouble. And, you know, that kind of bothers. The other one anomaly, and I did mention this to Matt earlier today, but in a penalty-laden weekend, the Cincinnati Bengals getting killed by Baltimore, had one penalty for 5 yards the whole game in a game where they were getting routed. And it was like somebody told them, look, guys, just stay out of the way.
Well, they kept their discipline, if not their heads, in that game.
Exactly.
But that's one thing.
Yeah, so John, if you could possibly take it up there.
Yeah.
You and I watched the games together, it should be noted again.
Yeah.
Another Sunday of Kieran and John time. And it's always a pleasure. And I think we were astounded by some of it, weren't we? I mean, we really were.
Yeah, absolutely. We've already kind of touched on it, but the one that really stuck out to me was that Falcons and Saints game, because it seemed like the narrative for New Orleans coming into the sort of the second half of the season was that they had, you know, managed to have papered over the cracks of Drew Brees' thumb injury. Bridgewater went in there and went undefeated 4-0, kind of while he was sort of minding the ship, so to speak. And now you come back in. I know Brees came back in last week, but he comes back in this week and doesn't throw a touchdown in the Superdome for the first time. And well, practically living memory against the team that are 1-7. So that was a very, very confusing one. And as Mike said, the Falcons defense did stand up very, very well. But I heard some whispers just coming through social media and whatnot. Now I can't remember the name, unfortunately, but they did make some changes to their defensive coaching staff, and at least some ideological differences of stuff that they weren't doing before. And I think if you're an Atlanta Falcons fan, they're not going to make the playoffs this year, but at least they'll be going down with a fight for the rest of the season, at least judging by the evidence of last weekend.
Yeah, philosophical differences is a good one, because Dan Quinn, you know, is really a logical positivist, and he had a lot of Neoplatonists coaching on his defense. So I think they really had to make a philosophical switch there.
That will be got by probably about 15% of the people who listen to this, if that joke.
I'll take the over-under on 12,000 then.
Of course, that meant, guys, with certain games that, you know, that it's not great unless you take the plus in terms of the underdogs or favourites. But, I mean, there was a couple of bad ones as well in there for people. I mean, Chargers at Oakland on Thursday, which was pretty tough. Bills versus Browns, he got a field goal that could have changed everything. Kansas versus Tennessee, like, where did that come from, Titans?
And what about, Kieran, what about the now irrepressible march of this Miami Dolphins team, 2-0 in the last 2 weeks, prior to that as well, like having some close games in that as well. So maybe, I know I certainly was, and I think, Kieran, you maybe sort of agreed with me in the first few episodes of the show at the start of the season, I was forecasting a potential 0-16 season for this Dolphins team. But, I mean, over the evidence of the last 2 weeks anyway, they're certainly beginning to prove me wrong. And the whole tanking for the first round pick, which if that was their strategy, which is a difficult thing to really ascertain whether or not that's what they were literally doing, but that might be going out the window now.
Yeah, and of course, yeah, Mike, Jets. Talk about the Jets, Michael, because they are heading towards the playoffs, according to their QB.
Yeah, I was really bothered, and I said this everywhere I could early in the season. You know, I didn't think Miami was quote-unquote tanking the season, and it's really tough to accuse a team of doing that. You know, and yes, they're jettisoning a talent in order to get draft picks, but that's a strategy, and it doesn't mean you're not trying to win. And they played pretty good defensive game against an Indianapolis team that, you know, admittedly was down to their third quarterback in Brian Hoyer, who looked, you know, very average and took one of the great hits of the season from Jerome Baker in that game. But, you know, Indianapolis was just Indianapolis was 1-for-5 in the red zone in that game. So they had opportunities where they could have kept themselves in it. I had, and I'll put in my plug now, I write my column on Patreon every Friday, picking all the games straight up. I had the worst week that I have ever had since I started doing this for NFLUK.com back in 2005. I had only 4 games right, and I didn't lose my position. Every week afterwards, I look at there's a site called NFL Pick Watch, and I check how I'm doing against the various pundits that they have there. And I basically still have the third best record. There are multiple people at each level, but I'm only 2 games behind the people with the with the best records, which is exactly where I was when I started. So I came off a four win straight up week, and I'm no worse off. So it was tough for everybody. And I'm actually quite proud that my best bet on the Betfair Friday column came through, which was Green Bay giving 5.5. And I had the value bet being Buffalo. And at that point, it was 3.5. So if you took it at 3.5, you did okay. If you took it after it went down to 3, you were had a bit of problem. And that game came under as well, which I was pleased with.
You saw the snow forecast.
Yeah, the Giants was not a good pick. Atlanta, New Orleans going over 51. Now, if you told me Atlanta was going to win, I probably would have thought that going over 51 might be the way, but that wasn't to be. And I did have my bad beat, which was I was advising the first half under for Green Bay at 23-5. And, of course, it was 14-10 at the half. So I was really struggling there.
Yeah, no, that can always get you that half point, can't it? Guys, it's now time for what I would call our weekly look at who is going to be the regular season MVP, because we've done it now 3 times in the last 4 weeks. But it is a fascinating market because Russell Wilson, he's back favourite, 6-4. Lamar Jackson, 13-5. Deshaun Watson, 13-2. I'm going to leave everyone out of that after that. You know, obviously, my boy has gone down, Matt Stafford, so he'll be cruelly denied his MVP due to injury.
I think that's entirely your fault here, and I think you put some sort of hex on him last week with your talk about Matthew Stafford. I think you texted me during the week that was 136 consecutive games he had played, and then we talk about him, or you talk about him specifically, and note his potential MVP chances, and then he just goes and breaks himself. So I think you might owe the fans of Detroit a little apology there, Kieran.
This is not to do with football, but with jinxes. Bill Simmons, he's primarily basketball, but used to be on ESPN and now on The Ringer. He tweeted in the middle of a Celtics game that the Celtics were back and playing great basketball, and Gordon Hayward was playing just as well as he was in 2017 before he did his knee in the first 10 minutes of the 2018 season. And literally 10 minutes later, Gordon Hayward broke his hand. I think to be able to jinx a guy from, you know, whatever internet distance you're at is a pretty good thing. I think we should point out as well, talking about MVP and Russell Wilson, it's great to do it in prime time. You know, he didn't have a great game overall. San Francisco's defense played well, but not as well as Seattle's in the end. I thought that was a game that really would have been fair to end in a draw. There wouldn't have been anything wrong with that. But Wilson made the plays when he had to make them. You know, one or two big plays, and that's exactly what he does. You know, when you think you haven't bend in. And I should point out that all 3 of us agreed last week that the Seahawks getting 6 points was the best bet on the board.
That is true, yeah. In fact, I quite fancy the Seahawks full stop, but I took the 6 just to make sure everything was safe. And that is true, yeah. A move is always seen when they go MVP in the market. But Lamar Jackson at 13-5, you know, if he has another 2 or 3 games in the next 6 weeks that resemble anything like what he's done in the last, say, 2 or 3 weeks, I think he's a smart option at 13-5.
Yeah, I would agree with you there, Kieran. He'd be of the ones that you have mentioned, I think, at the moment anyway, up to the evidence that we've seen thus far, I would suggest that Lamar Jackson is the, well, my odds on guy. I forget the odds that you just mentioned, the order of things are. But I think if Lamar Jackson keeps on pace, like he's currently, the commentators are saying it during the games last weekend, he's on pace at the moment to exceed Michael Vick's best ever season for rushing from the quarterback position. And it's not like he's just a one-track pony. This guy's really, really got an arm now this year.
A one-track pony, or maybe his season will go to the dogs. Ha ha ha.
Yeah, potentially. Who knows? But I think the interesting thing that unites all of these the players that you've kind of suggested there, Kieran, and I think I kind of hinted at this last week as well. But it's do you think the league is developing more as, you know, as sports science gets better and these athletes are sort of trained from, you know, literally since they were children to come into this game and go to the high school level and the collegiate level and then make it to the big time in the league. But it seems like the standout players these days have a lot more to the game than just a strong arm. And I think, I wonder if that's something we're going to see, you know, moving forward exponentially over the next decade or two.
I think it's more of the influence of college football's offenses into the NFL as people start to adapt, because a lot of these spread offenses and passing offenses and running quarterbacks were developed by colleges who can't compete with the biggest universities in terms of the players they can recruit. So they have to find ways of leveling the playing field. And one of the ways is by going to those kind of offenses. And bit by bit, the NFL is incorporating bits of that, because a lot of it's more difficult to do when you've got really talented players all over the field, instead of, you know, when you're Alabama and you can roll over a team like Texas Tech or whatever. And but the other thing is, this year you're noticing too, Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson, are both preternaturally talented athletes. They were both, you know, Murray was drafted at the top of the baseball draft. Wilson was playing baseball professionally while he was at North Carolina State before he transferred to Wisconsin and decided to concentrate on football. So you're getting these guys who are really spectacular athletes, and it's a case of the systems kind of evolving to take that talent into account, rather than trying to force everybody into that drop back, you know, 6'5" drop back passer who can scan the field and stand in against the rush, which worked for so many years and still works if your guy's good enough. But this is a great way of doing it. I think too that you have to give Lamar Jackson a bit of credit as far as the NFL staging a workout for Colin Kaepernick and inviting all 32 teams to come and evaluate him as if they need to in Atlanta. Because I think part of the motivation behind that is that Lamar Jackson is playing in basically the same offense Kaepernick played in when he was in San Francisco, only more so because the Ravens, I think, have a better power blocking scheme. But it's the same coordinator. It's just a different Harbaugh brother coaching. But, you know, the argument that Kaepernick wouldn't fit into an NFL team is starting, you know, if Lamar Jackson can, if you can do it with Lamar Jackson, you can probably do it with Colin Kaepernick as well.
Yeah.
Mention that very briefly. The Kaepernick thing is an interesting one, isn't it? That they announced that today, 3 years since he last played. Or a game of any note. And do you think some people now online are commenting that this is just a show from the NFL? There's no real series behind this, and they suspect that none of the 32 teams will really pursue trying to sign this guy to a contract. But what do you think? Well, this to you both, I suppose. Do you think that Kaepernick will end up at an NFL team as a reserve at the end of all of this, or is it just going to be more of the same?
I think someone will sign him. And I think it's partly a PR job by the team, but I think it's also a way of testing the waters. This is the NFL telling teams it's okay to sign Kaepernick now, even though, of course, they would deny there was any collusion involved.
Right.
But I think they're no longer worried about the political reaction from Donald Trump, because he's got other problems to worry about. And I think they're probably trying to stop the XFL from signing him, although that would go contrary to the XFL's image as being more patriotic than the NFL. And, you know, Vince McMahon and his wife is in the Trump administration. So, but, you know, I still think Kaepernick is better than a number of quarterbacks who are playing in the league right now. And he's not necessarily the greatest fit for Chicago, who would be one of the really likely places for him to go. Miami would be an interesting one. Indianapolis could probably sign him right now and stick him in the lineup. You know, I mentioned to somebody, I thought the Rams, it would be an interesting thing, although they have so much money invested in Goff. They don't know. Detroit, possibly, although, I kind of doubt that. I kind of would doubt that. But there are any number of teams who, if Colin Kaepernick can play as well as he did in 2016, he would be better than their starters or the backups who are starting right now, because that's the situation they're in. So, you know, I don't think he'll be demanding a huge contract right off the bat. He might well take a 1-year prove it deal, but it would certainly be a good move for a lot of teams, including those like Tampa, who may well move on from their quarterback, or Tennessee, who
Carolina even maybe
Mariota for sure. Yeah, Carolina if they want to give Kyle Allen some, because you know Kaepernick is a good match for Cam Newton as well.
Yeah,
in terms of quarterback, he resembles in style. So you know, I think it's a fascinating situation, and I just hope that the NFL is not doing this as a total scam because. You know, they're perfectly capable of doing that, but I do think this is more of a signal to the teams that, okay, go ahead and sign him if you want.
Yeah, and John, if I can come in there, I suppose, if I was answer, there's no doubt he should be on the team. He should be a starter in the NFL. He's good enough. It's as simple as that. If you're good enough,
yeah,
you should be playing in the league. There are a lot worse than him currently playing and or backups. So, I would say that he's about to come in from the cold, which is a good thing, and we should be seeing him hopefully playing in the NFL very, very shortly. And you mentioned, and we mentioned, of course, about Lamar Miller, maybe one of the reasons why he's coming back in from out of the cold. And they
Lamar
are
Jackson,
the Lamar Jackson. What did I say?
Lamar Miller.
Miller. Was that? I think he might have been in a movie sometime I saw. I'll look that up. Texans at Ravens, guys. Texans at Ravens is the 6 o'clock game.
And Lamar Miller's not playing for the Texans.
Lamar Miller is not there. Not there. This looks... I mean, it looks on paper like it's going to be straightforward enough for the Ravens, but after what we've seen in the last week... or 2 weeks at times, very few games seem to be straightforward unless the Ravens are involved. So, Mike, it's a bit of a catch-22, this one. It could be tougher than it looks.
Yeah, and we keep devaluing Houston's defense, you know, mostly because J.J. White is out. But they actually played a couple of, you know, pretty good defensive games in the past. And they've had 2 weeks to prepare because they're coming off the bye for this. So I think they'll be looking at a lot of New England Patriots tape to see what the Patriots did right and wrong in that game. You know, because I think I said a couple weeks ago that the Patriots did a lot right in that game. They just had breakdowns at the wrong times, which is always going to be the case. It's much like Russell Wilson with Lamar Jackson. You can do everything right and he'll still beat you because he's got that ability. But I think it's a good test for the Baltimore defense in this one, because in Deshaun Watson, you have another MVP candidate with many of the same abilities. And I'd argue that he would probably, that some of his MVP candidature is being coached out of him by Bill O'Brien, in the sense that he does seem to hesitate before he leaves the pocket and kind of opens up the game that way. I don't think the spread is big enough here to help the Texans, to be honest. And I kind of like the Ravens at home with that spread. And I saw it was even money today, to try to get some more money coming in on the Ravens.
Yeah, no, you're completely right. I think a lot of people will log on and see Houston Texans at Baltimore Ravens. They'll see the Ravens -4.5, as you say, at even money. And they'll think to myself, ooh, That is an interesting bet, isn't it, John? Because, Texans going good. Ravens have been absolutely flying. They're at home. You know, give me less than a touchdown? Yes, please.
I think that's a decent bet, isn't it? I think that's an interesting... Like, further to the discussion we were just having, though, and Mike also alluded to this a minute ago, but this, I think we'd be better prepared almost to continue this MVP discussion this time next week, really, because we'll get a lot of evidence when you have that game with Lamar Jackson going up against Deshaun Watson. Now, I think the Ravens have been fantastic, particularly in that Patriots game, but they are prone to to some mistakes in certain games. Obviously, the Browns, my favorite team, put 40 points on them only about a month or so ago. So it is they can appear vulnerable to teams who are able to stretch the field a little bit. And as you well know, Deshaun Watson is one of the best at doing that. And obviously with DeAndre Hopkins out there and the returning Will Fuller, who is Watson's sort of favorite deep threat, there are points there. There are a lot of points to be scored. It's just a matter of whether they can do it and whether or not they can sort of negate Jackson and the Ravens from doing the exact same. But if it comes down to it, I think that is an interesting bet. If I was just picking the winner of the game, I'd probably plump for the Ravens But then again, who knows? This could be a 20-point game, or no, maybe a 20 is overstating. This could be a 10-point game, or it could be a 3.5-type situation, a 3-point situation. So I think that's probably the game I have my eye on this weekend. It should just be fantastic entertainment for a neutral like myself.
Last word on this to you, Mike. I'd be keen on the Ravens -4.5. I have to say, if John's not as keen, would you?
Yeah, I am as well, and I think I was not allowing enough for home field. And it's funny that they're evens at -4 to -5, but they're 1-2 straight up, which means they should be pretty good favorites. And I honestly don't see the Texans keeping it that close in the end. But as I said, I've been wrong before. And the other interesting one is the under is even at 49, and I might well go for that. You know, people will be looking at the 49 points that the Ravens put on the board against Cincinnati last week. But Houston is a better defensive team than Cincinnati, even without J.J. Watt.
Good stuff there, guys. Let's move on to the late game. I'm just, as we're speaking, always moving like a shark, if you will.
in this horrible weather. Yep.
I'm looking at the game that's on the late game, because one of the things I want to touch on is just the strangeness of both of these teams. It is the Chicago Bears at the LA Rams. I don't really know what to make of them. Now, I have a deep dislike of the Bears. Sorry, Bears fans. I think it might just be Mitchell Trubisky, though, which John has led me to the light in that it might actually just be Big Mitch. But Big Mitch is what we call him. The Rams, Mike, let's start with the Rams. Like, what is actually going on with the Rams this year?
Well, I mean, the first thing you notice is that Jared Goff is looking a lot more like Mitch Trubisky than he was, you know, last year when he looked like Jared Goff until the Super Bowl. And I think a number of things are happening. One is that the Patriots showed a way of slowing down Sean McVay's offense. And we saw Pittsburgh do that pretty well. Minka Fitzpatrick, who all of a sudden has to be in the conversation for Defensive Player of the Year, and has turned into an amazing free agency pickup by Pittsburgh, was doing that robber thing from the safety position, which is to come down from the safety position and interfere, get in the way of the crossing routes, which are so much a key of Sean McVay's offense. He's trying to cross people at different levels. Second thing is, without Todd Gurley at 100%, which he clearly is not, they can't really make that play-action, run-pass thing work very well. He's not as effective as a receiver either. He's still got straight-ahead burst, which means he will get some, but they don't run him. They're not giving him more than about 10 carries a game. The third thing is that Brandon Cooks was out, and that takes the top level of his offense away, and he doesn't have anybody to replace Brandon Cooks. So Pittsburgh basically concentrated on stopping Cooper Kupp and held him to zero catches, which was you know, pretty effective. And they concentrated on putting pressure on Goff with Fitzpatrick messing things up in the middle, and that was pretty effective too, because he fumbled three times, I think, in four sacks. And then the Rams kind of went for desperation with that fake punt, which was pretty awful. And Johnny Hecker's a really good passer from the punter position, but when you line up 9 yards back instead of 15, it kind of gives a signal as to what you're about to do, and Pittsburgh read the signal correctly.
Mike, if you could not laugh when you say that Cooper Kupp was held to such a low score, because it's now time for John to gloat, because he played me in fantasy football this week, and I was very heavily reliant. I had Cooper Kupp, and we went through the stats with our other friend, and I said, Coop's going to get me out of jail here.
Well, and you could have been, you could have been relying on Saquon Barkley. So,
John,
he had 13 carries for one yard.
John, obviously, other than Cooper Kupp, there are other elements to why the Rams are stuttering, but I mean, Kupp's probably their best player. Brandon Cooks didn't get a touch either, as far as I'm aware. But it's a strange one because Chicago as well are the type of team that you just don't know what you're going to get. I'd have a sneaky one on the Rams for this one if I was being totally honest. I wouldn't go very, very big in on it, I have to say. And I might even wait to see how the game unfolds. But the Rams with a 6.5-point spread, that might be a little bit on the heavy side for a lot of people based on how they're playing. What do you think, John?
Yeah, you're probably right. The one thing I do, just again, it's sort of strictly on a match-by-match basis, I think that if I was to pick the winner in this game, I'd pick the Rams. But the thing that kind of colors my perception of the over-under and things like this in this game is the fact that the Bears, almost all season, tend to be involved in low-scoring games. Now, that's partly due to the problems that they have in their own offense. Like I think, just going back to fantasy, but I have David Montgomery. I picked him up this year, and he's had a couple of decent games, but whether it's the offensive line not helping him out, or he's just not picking the right lane to run through, or whatever it might be, but he's struggling out there. And I know that he was signposted as being one of their big offensive threats this season, the rookie that they picked up in the draft that they thought this year. So I think that's a problem for them. But they also, at the same time, the Rams aren't really as potent as they were certainly this time last year. I know we all know what happens in the Super Bowl and the 3 points that they scored. But if you remove somebody like Todd Gurley from the equation, who was, remember, the best running back in football last year, even if every other piece on the field is the same as it was last year, you're still operating at about an 80% clip there, because you're just not the same team that you were last season without this super, super effective running back. So I think that'll be the game script for the game. I predict low scoring and the Rams too. What did you say the over-under was, Kieran?
The spread is about 6.5. The over-under, well, if you're looking at a point spread, 41 points.
Yeah. I'd be under that one, to be honest.
That's pretty tightly set. And the Bears' defense is still a good defense. It just isn't a great defense the way it was. When they had the playoff run, they're not creating the turnovers and the points that they did. They miss Akeem Hicks a lot. The one worry for this is the Rams' offensive line has also not been very good, and this could be the kind of breakout game for Khalil Mack, who has not been getting sacks. He's putting pressure on, but he has not been getting sacks or turnover plays for the Bears, and didn't in the game against Detroit last week. But as you said, Montgomery is not going to give them, I think, a lot of yards. Cohen can't turn the corner. And Mitch is Mitch. I don't think you can depend on his passing game. So overall, I kind of agree with you guys on this, that it should be a Rams win. I would almost take Chicago in the points, except with Mitch, you don't know. And defensively, for some reason, Wade Phillips and the Rams have not been as good defensively. Because one thing we forget in that Super Bowl was that they held the Patriots to 13 in that Super Bowl. And they should be able to do that. I think they strangely enough, they actually miss Ndamukong Suh, who, even though he didn't rack up numbers last year, did absorb a lot of attention and make life a little bit easier for Aaron Donald and some of the other guys on that team.
Okay, well, it looks like we're all just about siding with the Rams. The 9:25 game live on Sky is a repeat of the Super Bowl from a couple of years ago, the New England Patriots at the Philadelphia Eagles, a 3.5-point spread. Of course, Mike is going to be new because Patriots are coming off. It wasn't a hammering in any way, shape, or form, but it'll be interesting to see how their psyche is affected from that loss.
Yeah, whether that's a game, I think one of the things I was saying about the Seattle-San Francisco game, it was close. Obviously, the difference was it was a close game, and they both teams were in it right to the end. But it's one of those things where you lose your undefeated season, but you say we can learn a lot from that loss. And when we meet them again, we'll have, it won't be the same. It'll be a whole new game. I think New England probably took that same attitude from the Baltimore game. It might hurt them to watch Seattle with Josh Gordon and Jacob Hollister, doing well offensively because they still need tight ends and wide receivers, and they let those two guys go for nothing, basically. But the only thing I can say here is that they're each coming off the bye week, so they've each had a chance to sort of to put things together. And one of the things in that Super Bowl week that I said bothered me was that there's no team better in football than bouncing back after a week than New England. They can break another team down in 1 week's time and put in the new systems they need, you know, to play a team. When you give the opposition a second week, it lets them catch up to what Bill Belichick may or may not do, or what the Patriots want to do. And Doug Peterson was very good about that. Of course, he had Frank Reich with him 2 years ago, and he doesn't now. And I think that shows in their offense. So I like the Patriots in this one at home against the Eagles, even though they will probably be a fairly easy mark for the Eagles defensively, because we know that they're going to put a strong pass rush on. It would be a better game for the Patriots, I think, if they hadn't let Michael Bennett go, who they picked up from the Eagles early in the season. I thought Bennett, you know, would be very good in this kind of a situation, and now he's doing that for Dallas. But I think at home, it's hard to go against the Patriots in this one.
Yeah, John, I'll let you take it up there. Put it to you this way, John. If we were talking 3 weeks ago, and I told you that the handicap of the Patriots-Eagles was 3.5 points, I think you'd have bit my hand off. I talk it to you now, and you think, well, they didn't look great against the Ravens. Although, if you watch that breakdown of the Ravens game, they're right in it till probably around that Edelman fumble after getting hit by a whirlwind start. So, taking the season as a whole, 3.5 looks nice.
It does indeed. Well, I mean, that's the nature of markets like this. So the evidence used to react to them is almost always just of the week before or in the fortnight before. So I think it'll be interesting to see. But you know what, Kieran, I want you to get me a price on the first team, to the first play caller to call it a Philly special, because that's the one thing I'm going to tune into this game to watch, to see if they repeat that. Obviously, the famous play call that was in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, and just ended with Tom Brady falling flat in his face.
They don't have my thing I'm
looking forward to.
Yeah, they don't have Trey Burton to throw it, and they don't have Nick Foles to catch it. So, you know, whatever the special is, it's going to have to look a little different. I think I had a brain plant there and said at home, I like it. I should have said even on the road. I like the Patriots, because obviously the game is in Philadelphia. I misspoke myself there.
Yeah, well,
home field advantage hasn't been that great.
You took the words right out of my mouth. Eagles' home field advantage is basically, if you're not playing well, they're going to boo the crap out of you very, very quickly.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things you have to try to do against them, is come out of the gate really early and try to discombobulate them. And, much as I like the Eagles team or elements thereof, I still think they're kind of a strange mix, with a lot of talent in areas and not enough in others. And whereas the Patriots are probably just under-talented right across the board right now, apart from their defense, which I think will be able to play pretty well against the Eagles.
Excellent stuff, guys. Right, let's get some best bets. It's a tough weekend, obviously. Yes.
Yeah, have we had the weekly Cleveland Browns report on tomorrow's game?
Well, I don't think it's quite as
funny. Funny that you mentioned it.
It's not as funny.
I had a feeling it might be coming up in the best bets area.
Well, you never know.
Go ahead, John.
Kieran, I was disappointed not to see the Browns mentioned on your official notes for today's show, by the way. So, you know, I think it's not often that the Cleveland Browns are getting a win this season. I would like a good 20, 30 minutes to discuss this. But, I mean, I know we're on a tight schedule here.
We are on a tight schedule, and you were very lucky.
Let me just say, I think that the Steelers getting points and odds on is actually very, very interesting against the Browns. And I will point out that although Baker Mayfield beat Mason Rudolph all 3 years he was at Oklahoma, and Rudolph was at Oklahoma State, that was Oklahoma against Oklahoma State. And right. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that it's actually it's actually even at one each, I think, between Rudolph and Mayfield in the NFL. They played once last year and once this year, and they split those so far. So, you know, I think this could be the time for Mason Rudolph to establish himself as the lost great quarterback from that 2018 draft.
John, you're not going to like that as the best bet, looking at that Thursday night game. Steelers at Cleveland, yep, 2.5 points. It's 11-10 as well, Mike. So you're getting...
That's what I mean. That's really tempting, I have to say.
It's a divisional game. Go ahead. Well, it's a divisional game, so these ones always have a little bit of extra spice to them. And I mean, the Browns played pretty well against the Steelers in their games last year. Well, at least they drew with them on the opening day of the season last year. And but just looking at the game from last weekend, they're still far from the finished product, very, very far from there. But you do see little bits of improvement. Slim Mayfield had a nice opening drive with the ball. There is a play calling issues in the red zone. No one's gonna say otherwise. And they had a strange sort of 7-down sequence almost on the goal line in which they ended up kicking a field goal, which doesn't really look good on anybody there, particularly Freddie Kitchens calling those plays. But it's the first game. I think it's the first game of the season that Mayfield hasn't thrown the pick. So I mean that's positive, and they won. That's a positive. So I mean here comes the March. They might become the first team. They could potentially, if they do have this incredible second half of the season, which a lot of their fans are sort of prophesizing as being, you know, the last clutching of the straws for this season. If they do have a good end, and the schedule does get a lot easier, I must admit, but they would be the first team to start 2-6 to make the playoffs, I think, since 1970 or something like this. So that suggests that it's not coming to happen.
It's more like 1870.
In court of law, it's precedent. So I mean, that's I'm just going to
the thing there. The thing I love was the last time they played in college in that Bedlam series, as they call it in Oklahoma. They threw for 598 yards and 5 touchdowns, and Rudolph threw for 448 yards and 5 touchdowns. But Oklahoma won 62-52. I think I would go under 114 points in this game. On
That's a bold move there, Mike. Bold move.
Okay, I'm going to, for me, I'm looking at the New Orleans Saints at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It's a big game, always is in the schedule. The Saints are bouncing back from what was a terrible performance against the Atlanta Falcons. I think they need to really get going. I think taking 5 points, even though it's on the road, I think that's a good bet. And the second one that is there is that line is at 50. And for me, that's a bit on the high side for this game.
Another one that I was looking at, Kieran, if I can just jump in very quickly there, is that just going back to the irrepressible March of the Dolphins that we talked about earlier, that they've now covered the spread in their last 6 games. And obviously the last 2 of those were actual victories. And they've got the Bills this week, so I'd be very curious. I'll be looking closely at the numbers for that one to see if it's for the buttons and down on that one.
Yeah, I mean, even though I picked Buffalo to win last week, I did say that, you know, if they get behind, they have a real problem. And you know, a 9-7 halftime lead from Cleveland was almost an insurmountable lead for the Bills. And the Dolphins are perfectly capable of going up on the Bills by a touchdown and then holding on defensively. Josh Allen can't play well. And that's a fairly good 5.5. I think a couple of games surprised me on the lines, and I'm trying to figure them out while we talk. I think Atlanta is getting 5.5 because they're coming off a great win, and the Panthers are coming off a loss. And I'm not convinced that the Panthers aren't a touchdown better overall than Atlanta, but that's one that where, you know, if they really have their offense working, that's one that the over-under is 49.5 on that. If it goes to that, Atlanta's going to win. if they come close to that. I don't think Carolina can win a shootout with them. The other one that really intrigues me is Jacksonville's getting 3 at Indianapolis. I have a sneaky feeling Jacksonville could, with the points, could be a good bet there.
Yeah, so there's a couple to look at there, but we'll leave it to John for the final say. Who are you going for?
I think we know. Put everything on the Browns. Every penny. Yeah. Gamble
with you have a house. Well, now you're going to have 2. Bet it. But no, I think I will do the same game multi for that one. I think just because I'm going to sort of, I've already raised my flag, so I may as well salute it now. I've been terribly impressed with Nick Chubb this year. And particularly the addition, obviously it was Kareem Hunt's first game in a Cleveland Browns uniform last week. And while he didn't break out any big runs, or he was pretty good in the receiving game as well. He got about 6 or 7 receptions, I think, some pretty decent yardage. But where he really shone, and I wasn't immediately expecting this, but he was acting as a fullback for a lot of Chubb's runs. And particularly there was one outstanding block that he put in that led to a Chubb run for about 20, 25, maybe even 30 yards. And so that could liven up. Like, Chubb was already one of the most dangerous running backs in football. So I think the addition of having those two guys back there, it'll confuse it'll potentially confuse the defense, because there's a lot of different weapons that to look at. If you have both Chubb and Hunt back there, and you've got Landry and Beckham out wide, I mean, that was the story going into the season, how defense would be able to cope with all these different looks that the Browns are potentially able to put out there. Now, that didn't play out, obviously, in the first half of the season, but there was some promising signs there. So I'm going to go for, this is the biggest rivalry that the Browns have, so they will be pumped up for this game. They're coming off a win, so I'm going to give, I'd be hopeful that they would win, and I'm going to say Chubb 2 touchdowns as well. So if I was to find some numbers for that, I would... I think that assumes
that he'll run them in from outside the red zone.
Yeah, he could. He's done it before. He's done it already this season. So
yeah, we'll Chubb and Hunt sounds like the name of some kind of Channel 4 comedy about, you know, two decrepit 20-year-olds who are going out on the dating scene in Newcastle or something like that.
Or an 80s pop, or an 80s cop duo. That could work as well. I could see that.
Yeah, potentially.
Chubb, you're my partner. I'll never let you down. We leave it at that, gentlemen. Thank you so much for looking ahead to all those games. John, I know it was so difficult for you having to not come in to help me in the studio. I'll put everything away. Don't worry. And Mike, thank you for... but gentlemen, today, thank you so much for joining me. I know it was a little bit later today due to other things, so thank you for taking the time out. We will speak to you both again next week. As Mike sort of said, please do gamble responsibly, and we'll speak to you all next week. Thank you so much for listening. Bye for now.